listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth. Truth, 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 truth.
Saturday. It is September 19th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting, as always, from the Chicago suburbs. It's actually a beautiful day out. The sun is out, although I did turn on the furnace this morning because it was actually 65 in my house. So I guess fall is quickly approaching. I'm really happy that you join me today at republicbroadcasting.org, and I'm also asked that you subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. Of course, you know that you can ask questions via our email program, which is comment@spingola.email. I invite you to visit our mostly friendly chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And of course, you know that you can look at the people that I've interviewed, for the past almost 10 years. It'll be 10 years next month that I've had the pleasure of having a radio program on RBN. It has been wonderful. I've met so many incredibly interesting people, and I consider it just an honor to be able to chat with people that do so much in what we refer to as the truth movement. And one of the people that I have admired for quite a long time, I feel like I've known my first guest for a long time, because I read his book, apparently his first book, which was published in 1988, and with the title of The Shadows of Power. And I bought it, and it was just a very enlightening book. So I feel like I have known James Perloff for a long time because I have read his other books also. So our first guest today for 2 hours is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior. It is also available in Kindle. And The Shadows of Power, which I already mentioned, The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline, and 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, Solving Political, Cultural, and Spiritual Riddles, Past and Present. Now, he just came out with a book, which is just a fabulous compilation. And unlike one of the interviewers that spoke with you, I would not have changed it a bit. Your writing is concise, to the point, very detailed. You're not redundant. I tend to be redundant and kind of drag things out, but you're very concise. Your writing is, well, perfect. James, welcome to the program. Are you there? Oh, James is muted and it can't. Okay, so we need to.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, I didn't even realize I'd hit the mute button, but in any event, I heard your introduction. I want to thank you for it. And I also wanted to congratulate you on your upcoming 10th anniversary of being on RBN. That's quite an achievement.
Yeah, it really is. It went by really fast. And I've enjoyed every minute of it, mostly. mostly. And, yeah, it's been great. I'm not planning on going anywhere, but it is the 10th anniversary coming up on the 23rd of October. And like I say, I've interviewed some fabulous people, and some not so fabulous people. So you're one of the fabulous. You're on the good side here.
Well, Dana, I found that podcast and talk show hosts are often the best informed people around because they have such a variety of guests who bring such unique information, and they they take in that information over the years, and they themselves become quite expert on a broad variety of issues, such as yourself. You, of course, I consider you the best informed podcast host out there, radio show host out there on World War II.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Your book is not going to be on Kindle, but one of the things with your book is that you have all, and the reason it's not going to be on Kindle, what is the reason?
Well, as I understand it, Amazon generally doesn't like, a lot of this book can be found for free online, about 60% of it. And as I understand it, Kindle doesn't like it if you also have the same material for free online. Not that all of it's there, but I think they make you wait a period of time. I'm afraid by the time I was able to assemble a Kindle book, which does require a completely different set of codes and a very different way of linking things, that by the time it was available to be on Kindle, that not only would the situation have changed, but Amazon might have decided to censor the book altogether. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. That's why I'm actually doing a separate printing from Amazon's on-demand service, where the book is.
Good.
Well, I'm also doing a separate printing, which will be entirely under my own control, so that if the book does get censored, I'll still be able to make it available from myself and from secondary sellers.
I think that it will be censored, to tell you the truth. I just think there's so many things in here that are just so telling. One of the things that struck me the most, I think, is chapter 5, the very first page of chapter 5 is titled Putting COVID-19 in Perspective. And at the very bottom, you have deaths by abortion. And abortion has always been a topic of interest for me because I remember when Roe v. Wade passed, I was shocked, horrified. I mentioned it to people at church about how terrible it was, and they just kind of poo-pooed it. And since then, 55 million infants have been slaughtered. But anyway, deaths by abortion from January 1st to March 25th, 2020, 9,913,702 deaths by abortion. That just makes me very, very sad and mad because children are the most precious gifts that people could possibly have. I cherish my children. One of them has passed, and I cherish them. They're the best part of my life. They were the best part of my life. Taking to the library, going to the lake, going on bike ride. It was just the most precious moments that a parent could have that I shared with my children. So this makes me very sad, obviously.
Yeah, and the point that that specific graph was making was that when the country went to lockdown, COVID deaths were actually very minor in comparison to many other causes of death, which abortion topped the list, was way below suicide and other causes. But, speaking of abortion, one thing I've noticed, Deanna, is that one of the great common themes of we call the 1%, the deep state, the global elite, the establishment, whatever we call them, is population reduction. We've all seen those quotes from Robert McNamara saying how the death rates have to go up, and Ted Turner saying he wants to reduce world population by 95%, and Bill Gates, his famous TED Talk, and Zbigniew Brzezinski saying it's so easy to kill a million people today compared to the past when it was easier to deceive a million people. If you look back to the eugenics movement of the 1930s, where we had 35 states with eugenic laws, if you look to abortion, if you look at transgenderism and gay marriage, these things reduce population. Sex robots was a thing that came out a couple of years ago. That reduces population. The various things that they're doing, the demasculinizing of males, the various, there's so many things they're doing that have as a common denominator the reduction of the population. And of course, that goes for the way they poison us too, through the GMOs, the fluoride, the vaccines, etc. You know, we have this incredibly high autistic rate. Now, obviously, people who are autistic are not good candidates for reproduction. So you take a look at what's going on with the establishment, the things they do to us. War is another one, of course. What we just reduce the population more than war, the another thing that contrives. So population reduction runs all through the history of the deep state.
Oh, how true. How very true. And I don't think that there's too many families that are not hit or impacted by some member of their family being autistic or having Asperger's mm-hmm. or some other form on the autistic spectrum. There's right. So many people.
And it was almost non-existent before. It existed, but not anywhere near. I think in 1983 it was 1 in 10,000, and now it's what, about 1 in 40, 1 in 50. Depending on what numbers you look at. So obviously there's a reason, and I certainly, I'm speaking as a registered nurse myself, I don't think it's any coincidence that as the vaccines have gone up from 6 to around 70 before children in school, we've seen a proportionate ratio of the increase of autistic children, which medicine itself just tries to claim is accidental with no relationship. But obviously everything has a cause.
Right, and you mention on page 71 in your book, you talk about being a registered nurse, and you talk about the nursing home situation and versus the hospital situation with COVID-19, and they totally reversed the policies. And of course, this has to do with, when you think about New York and some other places, this is just not the policies that should have been in place. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Again, I've been a registered nurse since 1975, and I retired last year before the COVID crisis hit. But I've worked I worked primarily as a med-surg nurse in major hospitals in the Boston area, but I also worked sometimes doing home care, and sometimes I worked in nursing homes as well. And the policy in a nursing home is an environment where people live. It's not an acute care setting. It's a place where you have people usually assist you with eating, dressing, bathing as necessary, but it's not a place to be sick. So the policy in a nursing home was, if we had somebody, nurse's aide reported to me that a certain patient had a fever, but we did a doctor's order first, but our standardly we would send them to the hospital so that the cause of the fever could be determined. You know, was it a urinary tract infection? They have a chest x-ray to see if it was a pneumonia. And typically they would be treated for 2 or 3 days in the hospital, usually with, the IV antibiotics and IV fluids to hydrate them. And then once the fever subsided and they were feeling a bit better, they would be sent back to the nursing home once they were no longer contagious. But you see what happened with Cuomo in New York or in Pennsylvania, where they say that about 70% of the COVID deaths in Pennsylvania were from nursing homes being sent COVID patients. They did the exact opposite of that protocol. They took acutely ill patients and put them into nursing homes. And I can definitely say, although the quality will vary from nursing home to nursing home, as a general rule, nursing homes are not equipped. They don't have the staff, the training or the equipment, the gowns, and et cetera, needed to isolate patients who are acutely ill. Quite often in most hospitals, in most nursing homes, they have roommates, so they're not in, in isolated rooms. And so, of course, the disease spreads quite quickly. And so that was really a death sentence. And I do quote a couple of doctors who are whistleblowers, Dr. Simone Gold, who's gotten a lot of attention lately. She was one of those doctors on the recently on the Supreme Court steps, who got fired from her position as an ER doc for speaking out. And also, she did a joint whistleblowing interview with Dr. Dan Wolgelandner, trained at Yale. And they spoke about the fact that Andrew Cuomo could have sent those acutely ill patients to the Comfort, the hospital ship, the Comfort, which was empty in New York Harbor, or to the Javits Center, which was also empty, and they were equipped, but he didn't. Instead, he sent them into the nursing homes. And Candace Owens, specifically, I quote her on this, that she believes that he was looking for a quick out on the rising cost of Medicaid, which was threatening to, you know, go bankrupt in New York. And killing these people off, of course, was a swift way to do that. But in the opinions of Drs. Gold and Wolgelandner, this is a criminal thing. There was no excuse for it whatsoever.
Right. It was a budget thing. And of course, the Medicaid is paid for by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that throughout the United States, you can see evidence of the fact that because states are required to pay a large portion of the Medicaid. I think it's 40% or something like that, 60. I'm not sure which it is. But states are unable to maintain infrastructure. And that was the way that it was set up first. And it was really when we got Medicare back in 1965, they started Medicare. Mm-hmm. It seemed like, oh, what a wonderful thing. And it's like any other so-called benefit that we get from the government. It seems to be a good benefit. It seems to be something really good for the consumer or the resident. And it turns out that it isn't, that it all seems to funnel into Big Pharma's pockets.
Oh yeah. Well, Big Pharma is, certainly one of the chief villains in this whole scenario. You know, seeing the suppression of hydroxychloroquine, which is, I have a chapter on.
Right.
I tried to devote it's 27 short chapters in this book, and I tried to cover every aspect of COVID. Hydroxychloroquine is obviously one of them, and I felt it deserved a chapter on its own because I quote a number of doctors who've had amazing success. And of course, the very first, Dr. Didier Raoul, the eminent, microbiologist of France, who did a study on over 1,000 patients in France they were having an over 90% recovery rate with hydroxychloroquine used with, azithromycin. But the American doctors were doing even better, almost 100% recovery using hydroxychloroquine with zinc. And hydroxychloroquine, of course, has been around since the 1940s. It's totally safe. It's FDA approved. And, by the way, Dr. Fauci knew totally about the effectiveness of this because his own journal of the NIH, the, Journal of Virology, published an article back in 2005. Let me just get the title of that. It's called Chloroquine is a Potent Inhibitor of SARS Coronavirus Infection and Spread.
Wow.
That's from his own journal. You know, so he already knew that. But Big Pharma knew that this hydroxychloroquine treatment cost $20 or less, and it's not patentable, at least anymore. And so they wanted to get rid of it. And I think they were not counting on public awareness or the fact that doctors were going to have tremendous success with this. So a tremendous campaign has been underway, even conducting fake trials. And then there was a scandal. This is tremendous. I was so pleased to see that the British press was doing a better job than our American press in exposing some of the things going on with COVID. The Guardian ran an expose on an American company called Surgisphere, which claimed it had a database of 12,000 hospitals, and they were claiming that their database showed hydroxychloroquine didn't work. Now, the Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine used those statistics in their own journals, to say that hydroxychloroquine didn't work. But the Surgisphere was exposed by The Guardian. Three female journalists there did an outstanding article, which I quoted in my book. And they showed that Surgisphere, at last count, had three employees, one of whom was an actress, another one was a science fiction writer. They obviously did, you know, it's pretty clear they did not have the ability to manage a 12,000 hospital database, as they were claiming. And so these journals, leading journals had retracted their articles. But I see we're at a break. So
yes, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
It's with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. To change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close,
sound. I heard the, but I just am not hearing any sound at all. Don't know what is going on. I'm just not sure what is going on here. Check my speakers. Okay. How are we now? Okay, I can hear you now. Somehow my speaker went down to nothing. I didn't do anything. I'm not sure what happened, but the speakers just went down from 60 to zero. So anyway, we're back. And so we were talking about how hydroxychloroquine, and you mentioned that or you were going to mention that Trump had taken it, and that you also mentioned that Dr. Fauci had said earlier that in 2005 he mentioned hydroxychloroquine and its efficacy, and all of a sudden he was onto something else. It seems that he has been on the record in several places. He'll say one thing one time, and then just the opposite at another point in time, and you kind of wonder, is he trying to be on record for everything just to cover his butt? What do you think?
You know, it's interesting you said that, Deanna, because I'm getting an echo here now on my end. Seems like we're having some strange trouble, so now it's gone. Okay. But yeah, Dr. Fauci, a number of people have mentioned this to me, how he'll take both sides on every position. He will say you know, asymptomatic people are a problem, asymptomatic people are not a problem, and you need a mask, you don't need a mask. You know, he's been talking about how we need a vaccine, then he'll say vaccines are dangerous. It seems he takes, at some point, he'll make a statement on both sides of every issue, and that way, in the future, no matter what happens, he can go back and say, you see, I told you you needed it. I told you you didn't need it. You know, it seems like that is his playbook to, you know, he's bitten every horse so that he can always be a winner. That's what one of the things about him. It's not something I see in every politician. Certainly, Bill Gates is quite consistent in what he wants, but Dr. Fauci seems to like to play both sides of the table, but generally he'll stay on Gates' side.
Right. Yes. And Gates, seems to be, well, he funds the World Health Organization. He, of course, funds Gavi. He funds the media. Is there anything that he doesn't fund?
Yeah, anything that's natural. You know, in the book, I have a chapter on Bill Gates, and in addition to the vaccines, you know, he's, his foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is the largest foundation in the West, $46+ billion in assets, they have bought 5.3 million shares of Crown Castle, which is a 5G infrastructure provider. They also own 500,000 shares of Monsanto, of course, which produces glyphosate and GMOs. And he's also investing in lab-grown meat, of all things. You know, rather than have us eat the meat
right.
we eat, we should be eating his lab-grown meat. He's also investing in artificial breast milk, a company called BioMilk. And there's also, and this is all from the mainstream, by the way. He's also got invested in a plan to block sunlight, supposedly to stop
right.
global warming, by putting millions of tons of dust in the atmosphere. And he's also backing a plan to surround the Earth with surveillance satellites. But in any event, whether it's the human body or food or the environment, he doesn't like anything that's natural, and that's something that's disturbing. The other thing about Bill Gates, as sort of a common denominator, you can look at this guy, is that most people, if they ask you, you know, how should you keep yourself healthy and how could you protect yourself against COVID? I've never heard Bill Gates at one time, at any time, myself, ever say something like, you know, you should lead a healthy lifestyle. You should get some exercise, some fresh air. You should eat right. You know, build up your immune system. Take some, you know, supplement yourself with vitamin C and D, which are well known to mm-hmm. support the immune system. I've never heard him say anything except that you need an injection of a vaccine that I've invested in. That's the only thing he talks about. Something else that points to the fact that he's not sincere. And by the way, he was caught on camera when it was Fareed Zakaria was telling him how terrible the economy was. He was beaming and
laughing.
Giggling. Yeah,
yeah,
and he was
yeah.
laughing. You know, he thought it's funny. Here's a guy with his, never mind his foundation. He himself is worth over $100 billion. Now you've got tens of millions of people out of work, millions threatened with eviction. He thinks it's funny. So do we really want to trust this guy? Does he really care about humanity? Does anyone really think he cares about humanity? Of course, I also quote Robert F. Kennedy had an extensive post online, and I quote most of it in there, about all the damage, the death and paralysis that Bill Gates vaccines and sterility that
right.
have caused around the world.
Right. Now, if he really, really was a decent human being, he would use his money to fix things rather than to keep acquiring money to destroy humanity, basically. And the other thing about Bill Gates and a lot of other people in technology is that he did not allow his children, their children, to use technology such as iPads and, whatever technology that was in their home, he never allowed his children to use it. He expected them to read books and to do things that were really beneficial. And so you have to question his motives, and certainly he has done a lot of destruction, as you mentioned, in India, where he's been kicked out. In fact, I think India has a lawsuit against him with the polio vaccine situation, where he went in and gave all these polio vaccines And there was 147 children who developed polio. And then there was also the Gardasil vaccine. He was just a rotten human being. And of course you've seen where he's talking about injecting these things into children's arms. And he's laughing. He's talking with his wife, his partner, whoever she, whatever she is. And, I can't believe anybody would be that vile and that evil. And I really still, I don't believe that he invented anything in his garage. I think it was set up. His father was into Planned Parenthood. He was the head of Planned Parenthood in the Seattle area. His mother was from a banking family, associated with the Federal Reserve there. This is all a setup. It isn't just happenstance that some dude by the name of Bill Gates got all this money. In fact, when the government took him to trial or questioned him about the monopoly, and I've watched certain aspects of when he was questioned, he just beat around the bush to the point that they did allow him to have this monopoly. And apparently Steve Jobs didn't want to have any part of what this monopoly entailed. And it was a short time later that Steve Jobs actually passed away with cancer, supposedly. I'm very conspiratorial here, but you have to question this stuff.
Well, you know, James Corbett has an excellent series, came out recently, called Who is Bill Gates? It's a 4-part series, and this thing is ultra documented. That's something that I strive for in my own book, by the way. It's got almost 300 endnotes, because I know that when you hand my book to a skeptic, they're going to say, well, what's the source on that? So everything is sourced, but Corbett's got one, and not only does he talk about what Bill Gates is doing recently, he goes into the history of Microsoft, and he does reveal that there was a behind-the-scenes deal between IBM and Gates' mother, who asked, and actually have an interview with, it's on video, of an IBM executive, said the whole thing was a setup. And a lot of these rags to riches stories, you know, the guy who made it good, you know, for rock bands and other stories, we've heard more and more of these stories turn out to be setups rather than actualities. But yeah, Bill Gates was set up, and it seems, not only to become the founder of Microsoft, but it seems that there was a long-term agenda involved there, doesn't it?
Right. Yes, I believe there was. And our wonderful producer, Bordop, said that the mother was on the board of IBM. So, the whole thing was set up. He didn't get to where he is by accident or by talent, because he really doesn't seem to have any talent. Technically, when he doesn't talk about technical things, he just talks about vaccines, and he's a promoter. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask, what put all this money into his stewardship? And like you said, Corbett did an excellent job on Who is Bill Gates, and I watched that, as many people have.
Right. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
How'd you get off?
It was going to be a good one. I'll come back.
it'll come back to you. Yes, it is really amazing how he all of a sudden has all this money, and people, especially now, when people have lost their jobs, and this COVID-19 situation has not affected the people that were already well off. It didn't affect Amazon. It didn't affect any of the big corporations. In fact, what it did was create a huge transfer of money. And if you look at some of the increases for some of these big corporations, you find that billions have been transferred during this relatively short period of time, where it could not have happened under normal circumstances.
Right. They said that Jeff Bezos actually made $12 billion in one day. incredible. But of course, you know, the big online companies are doing well under the COVID. And of course, the small mom and pop businesses are being crushed. I know what I was going to talk about before was, and in addition to the things you were saying about Gates, was his complete lack of credentials. He has no medical credentials whatsoever. He's not a doctor. He's not an immunologist. He's not an epidemiologist. He has no medical training. And yet, he is treated as if he is the world's greatest expert on how to handle epidemics and pandemics. You know, it's interesting how on mainstream media, I have never once seen anybody question Bill Gates about his lack of credentials. And it's interesting that someone like Dolores Cahill, who is a PhD immunologist and has credentials a mile long, professor at University College Dublin, she gets censored on YouTube, but there's never any censorship of Bill Gates.
Wow. And he's a college dropout. And even when he began Microsoft, he actually got rid of his partner. His partner got sick and had cancer, and Gates pretty much, he took advantage of the situation. He's not even nice to people that he should be nice to, like his partners. He's a real scumbag. He's a piece of garbage. I think we've clarified that.
Yeah, I think that pretty well sums it up.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Mikovits, and I just love her. Read both of her books. Read her book and her partner's book on masks. And you address her. You talk about her in your book, and she is such a wonderful person. She's so genuine. She's very brilliant, and she's genuine. And she says, and you pointed out in the book, that let's see, what do you point out? It's a discussion that she had with Dell Bigtree, who is very important in bringing a lot of things to light. And she said, according to a discussion she had with Dell Bigtree, according to your book, that there's actually coronavirus in the flu shot. And Dell Bigtree asked her about this. And I have only had one flu shot. I had it probably back in 2005. That's the only time I ever had flu. I was very sick. And I thought, boy, I'm never going to do that again. I did it because my doctor recommended it. You know, people in authority, when they make recommendations, you think, oh, okay, they know what they're talking about. But I've learned that that's not always the case. Anyway, what do you feel about that or think about that? What is your investigation or your research on that?
Well, I should mention that Judy Mikovits had said that the coronavirus was in the vaccines, and actually the person who spoke to Dell Bigtree was Dr. Dolores Cahill, the immunologist I mentioned before, who was confirming what Mikovits had said.
Right.
She said that these flu vaccines are cultured in animals that do have coronavirus, and so you will end up getting coronavirus in that shot. Yeah. And, you know, a question I have is, you know, the thing that made COVID deadlier than the flu in the initial months, you know, I have a friend who's a very red-pilled doctor. She's a world-class doctor. She's highly educated, was working in a major hospital. So I sat down with her. She's been on guest on SDT report, but we keep her name a secret, so she won't affect her practice. But I asked her, you know, is the COVID any deadlier than flu? She said yes, and she said what makes it deadlier is this autoimmune response that occurs in a few people. It's called cytokine storm, and there's a lot of literature on that online. You can find it very easily. And what happens is sometimes for just a few people, the COVID virus would invade the alveoli, which are the lung air exchange cells of the lungs. And there'd be an autoimmune reaction, which would be very rapid and could be deadly. That was what, but that can be stopped in its tracks by hydroxychloroquine. But she said that is what the distinction is. And I certainly do know some people who have died from COVID, secondarily I know them. So I don't doubt that it's true. But Dr. Judy Mikovits is one of those people I do admire very much. She, I read the first half of her book, Play with Corruption, then I had some cataract surgery, and I wasn't able to read until they got me new glasses, so I only got halfway through the book, but I'm going to finish it. But it's an outstanding book. Her sincerity shows through her words. She's not motivated by any agenda except the truth. And I would like to see a study done on these people who have cytokine storm to see what their vaccination record was, because this is a fact that Robert F. Kennedy talks about, that people, they tried to develop a vaccine for SARS, which is 79% similar genetically to COVID-19. That's according to The Lancet. And when they tried to develop a vaccine for SARS, the animals went into cytokine storm when they encountered the real virus. I would love to see a study done to see just exactly what how many of these people who had this autoimmune reaction had been receiving these flu shots. I'll tell you a personal anecdote. My mother got a flu shot every year, and she got Alzheimer's so bad she could remember the sentence she started. She was a lot worse than Joe Biden is right now. I mean, she was really bad for the last 4 years of her life. If you went to the room and spoke to her for a half hour and you came back 30 seconds later, she wouldn't know you were there. On the other hand, my father, who never got a flu shot, at the age of 99, could still remember Charles Lindbergh flying overhead in 1927, clear as a bell. Now of course my mother and father were genetically dissimilar, and so you could always say, oh, that's just genetics. But I certainly believe that this is unquestionable. There is mercury in the flu shot. There is thimerosal. The CDC admits that on their website. And when you get to the age of 90 or so, you can't handle that mercury anymore, as well as the aluminum, the adjuvant, and the other things that are in there. And so that's why I have no question in my mind that that's why we have this outbreak of Alzheimer's. Not that people didn't ever go into dementia before, but not at the level we see today. So yeah, vaccines are a bad business. And again, the correlation between autoimmune disease, Alzheimer's, and autism, and the increase in vaccines, I think it's so obvious. It's in your face. And that's why I recommend people download the movie Vaxxed, by Del Bigtree, who, by the way, he got standing O's. He was the best speaker at the Red Pill Expo last year that I attended in Hartford, Connecticut. There were a lot of good speakers there, but nobody got a response like Del Bigtree. He's quite a guy. And as you probably know, a couple of weeks ago, his entire channel with over 400,000 subscribers was deleted by YouTube.
Right. Oh, what a shame. What a terrible thing. And he is. He's so personable. He's great. He's terrific. But you're right about the flu shot. They say that if you have it 5 years in a row, you're a candidate for Alzheimer's.
Right.
And we have seen a huge increase in Alzheimer's, and particularly when you're in a facility, an assisted living or memory care or whatever kind of a facility you're in, it's required that you have a flu shot.
Right.
So they've just, it's a sad thing. I'm sorry about your mother. It's, what an awful thing. I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah, we had no idea at the time. I didn't put two and two together that she was getting the flu shot. Yeah,
people just, they trust their doctors. They trust science, or what they assume to be science. The flu has been around for what? It said in your book, it's been around for 84 years and we still have the flu. Isn't that what?
I didn't write that, but I saw something on Twitter that said we had the flu shot for 78 years and we still have the flu.
Right.
Exactly. This, by the way, this is one of the reasons why a coronavirus vaccine, why we should not develop one. This is pointed out, I quote Dr. Stefano Montaneri is an Italian nanopathologist. He said if he'd suggested such a thing as a student, he'd been kicked out of his classroom. The reason he says it's this, coronavirus is one of the things that causes the common cold. is that you never get immune to the common cold. People will get the common cold a couple hundred times during their lifetime, typically. And why? Because the coronavirus and the other viruses that cause the common cold keep mutating. So you develop a vaccine against coronavirus, guess what? It's going to keep mutating. Sure. And next year that vaccine will be worthless, but you'll still have the toxins of the vaccine in your body. It'll become this endless cycle of vaccines. You'll never get immune to something that constantly mutates. So I have a chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need COVID vaccine. That's not including hydroxychloroquine, which I set aside a whole chapter for, but that's one of the 8 reasons is the fact that the virus keeps mutating, you know, and you never develop immunity to a common cold and you'll never get immunity to coronavirus. They've got some other agenda behind us. And if you look what they're doing with the DNA altering mechanics of these mRNA and DNA vaccines, and Dr. Kerry Madej, who I quote, has been very good on this. They're looking at changing our genetic makeup. And that's a very dangerous thing to tinker with.
Why? Why would they want to do that?
You know, Diana, I don't go into my book because I'm sticking strictly to the science and
right. Order
book, you know. But if, you know, in my book, 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, and on my website, I have a chapter in a post. It's called Making Sense of the Supernatural. And, you know, for a long time, I thought the stuff about aliens and all that stuff was just a Pentagon psyop. You know, I didn't think that would believe. Mm-hmm. But then I started talking to people. And I talked to a Vietnam War vet who was I knew from church. And this guy, he's an engineer. He's not going to pull my leg. He told our Bible study that during the Vietnam War, they were on a nighttime bombing mission. They had a UFO right up next to them. And it was right on their radar. And the thing took off like couple thousand miles an hour. And you start to dig into this stuff, you find that we are dealing with the movies call them aliens, but those are really fallen angels. And the movies love to talk about superheroes, you know, the Incredible Hulk. Those are actually a reference to the giants that were actually on the Earth before. These were transhumanized beings. The skeletons have been dug up, and if you look at L.A. Marzulli, he's got all kinds of newspaper articles from the 1900s, the 1800s and 19th century, newspaper articles, even the New York Times talking about they were digging up these skeleton giants. The Smithsonian destroyed them all. They wanted to get rid of that biblical history of giants and the scientific history of it as well. But what was going on, if you look at the Bible chapter 6, it talks about how God brought a great flood on the earth. And, you know, when I wrote my book, Tornado in the Junkyard, oops, we're on that. We'll cover that on the other side.
Right, all righty. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. And we were talking about Vietnam, and you were talking about missiles, or not missiles, but things that they could not explain. I've read Doug Valentine's books on some of the stuff that are you back? Are you there? James, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just got back to my...
I was talking to myself.
Oh, that's all right.
I do that a lot. And I get quite a lot of information that way. Anyway, I was talking about... I gave him your website. And you were talking about Vietnam and some of the strange sights and things, and I've read Doug Valentine's books, and he talked about some of the experiments that they were doing with weather modification and things during the Vietnam years, and you talk about the large skeletons that were dug up, and yes, I've read about that also, and I've never tried to figure out where they came from or why or what, but I believe that there were giants on the earth, that we haven't always looked like we do. And I also believe that, certain people have information that is not shared by the rest of us. Some of Tesla's, all of Tesla's work was, stolen by the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. And of course, we are in a corporatocracy where the information that Tesla had was, now in the hands of corporations that are using it to do very dreadful things. Would you agree?
Definitely. You know, I often felt that what we see going on with things like chemtrails, that there's not only is this evil, I mean, you can tell there's an evil that goes beyond just human greed, bankers wanting to get rich of this, but there's also a level of technology, sort of an evil intelligence to what's happening in this long-term plan to take over the planet that goes beyond just normal, just bad guys, but actually I believe goes to a supernatural level. And again, I don't talk about anything like aliens or fallen angels in my book on COVID. I don't want to break people's reality.
Oh, no.
So I just stick to the scientists. But when I was doing earlier research, I found that, the Bible in Genesis 6, for one thing, I'd written a book called Tornado in a Junkyard back in the late 90s, where mm-hmm. I discovered that there really was a flood on the Earth. That scientifically speaking, 75% of the Earth's rock is sedimentary. In other words, chiefly deposited by water. And also you've got hundreds of billions of fossils. Where did they come from? You know, a fossil is remains that were covered by sediments. But normally, when an animal dies, it's either eaten by predators or it decays before sediments can cover it. You've got to be covered, but with sediments fast, and the flood explains that.
Right.
We're not in another break already.
We're at the top of the hour.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back momentarily.
Okay.
Don't go too far away now.
No, I won't. I'll stay right in.
Okay. Our second hour, and we have James Perloff with us. His website is jamesperloff.com, and his current book, it just came out August 17th, just a little bit over a month ago, and the name of that book is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. And you know the allegory, red pill, blue pill. Well, anyway, James, let's continue from where we left off. We were talking about some of the things that some of the things that are going on in the world. You were talking about fossils, about the flood, and that there was one, and in certain places you can see that. Correct?
Right. Exactly. In addition to the fossils and the rock, you've got over 200 cultures that had flood legends. Even Plato spoke of the great flood.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But, as to the question of why God brought a flood upon the earth, I find that it's helpful to go beyond chapter 6 of Genesis, where you get the impression there was violence on the earth, and you read about this union people have had different interpretations on it, but it's clearly a union between angels and women, which created this race of giants. In other words, these were transhumanized beings. But if you start to look at the extra biblical books of Enoch, which is quoted in the Bible, or Jubilees, or Jasher, which are not quoted in the Bible, but are referred to in the Bible, Jubilees, for example, says, all flesh corrupted its way, alike men and cattle and beasts and birds and everything that walketh on the earth, all of them corrupted their ways and their orders. And then reading from the book of Jasher, chapter 4, it says, the sons of men in those days took from the cattle of the earth, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the air, and taught the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to provoke the Lord. And God saw the whole earth was corrupt, and all flesh had corrupted its ways, all men and all animals. So I realized something, Deanna, that it wasn't just that God was angry, so he decided to bring a flood on the earth. It was the fact that his original creation, which Satan hated, had been corrupted. He had to basically, as I put it, he had to reboot the planet. And that's what happened, I believe, very strongly with the flood. But again, this takes us away from the subject of COVID.
Right.
But my point being that Lucifer hates God's creation, and we're seeing the same thing happen now. We're seeing transhumanism with these DNA-altering vaccines to kind of bring it back to COVID. And I think transgenderism set us up for that, this idea that, you know, you can go ahead and change the way we're created. It's fine. This is a Luciferian agenda. This has nothing to do with bankers just wanting to make money. This is, there's another agenda here that's much deeper and much darker. And I think, again, that because coronavirus keeps mutating, what they're going to do is, we have to give you more and more of these DNA-altering vaccines, and eventually, it's going to, we could get into this, how this is going to become like the mark of the beast that the book of Revelation speaks to. But, yeah, this is definitely a satanic thing. Your question that led me into this was why? You know, why were they doing this, these DNA-altering vaccines? It's not about making money, even though that is a, you know, they talk about Moderna billionaires. They certainly use it as an incentive to get these people to work on these things, the money and the stock options and things like that. But there is a deeper agenda here that has been unfolding for a long time and has to do with the basic concept of good versus evil.
Oh, I totally agree with you regarding good versus evil. And there is, unfortunately, a lot of evil people or people who are fooled. I think that, well, in the government schools, the things that, the changes in the school system, which was taken over by the federal government, they federalized it, and they get extra money for children who are considered needy or disabled in some way. And so, a lot of it, as you say, is based on money, but a lot of it is just implementing this evil agenda upon all personhood.
Right, right. It goes beyond. It's money makes the world go round. They say, you know, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds know that most men have their price, so you can buy a politician, you can buy a news commentator, and get them to say what you want through the power of money. But it's not ultimately, I mean, you look at the guys who are or the beings that are the deepest part of this oligarchy, for them it's about a lot more than just the bucks.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Why don't we open the phone lines? I'm sure that there are some people who have some questions. So we'll open the phone lines, and you can call in at 800-313-9443 if you have a question for James. But let's talk a little bit more about some of the things in your book. As I say, it's very succinct. It's an easy read. It's difficult. There's a lot of things in here. But you have made it very concise, which is that's the way you write. That's just how you write. You're a concise writer. You're detail oriented. You don't meander, which I really like because I do a lot of meandering myself. You mentioned that this would never be in Kindle. And I can see why they wouldn't want it in Kindle. But you have notes at the back of each chapter. And you have, they're not live links, but you've covered each thing so well, that if people really want to go to the to the links, they can easily do so. Is there any chapter in here that you really felt that really tugged at your heart? The lockdown, that's house arrest. And you also mentioned Vernon Coleman in the lockdown, and I think a lot of people have watched his old man in the chair on a video.
Yeah.
He's a very nice old gentleman, I think. But this lockdown, I think personally, anytime that you isolate somebody, and now that that people are in this lockdown situation, they're more apt to watch TV more. There's apt to be more stress, more domestic violence. And this TV, it's programming. They call it programming because it really is programming. They are programming you to feel fear. And the best way to program somebody is to isolate them. And of course, reducing your oxygen level is also another way of really affecting your brain. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. In the first part of this, the book is divided into five major parts and 27 chapters. And the first part is on the lockdown. I wanted to start with the lockdown because, unlike the virus itself, the lockdown is not hypothetical. I mean, it's easily documentable how many people lost their jobs, how many people are being threatened with eviction, this sort of thing. So the first chapter is on the economic and health impact of the lockdown, and the next chapter is on the destruction of civil liberties, which I consider equally important.
Oh, yes.
And then I have a chapter called "Was the Lockdown Necessary? Experts Speak Out." So I have a number of scholars and scientists from around the world who explain why the lockdown was not needed. People like Sukra Bhakti, the eminent infectious disease specialist from Germany, and Vernon Coleman, who you mentioned, and Dr. Knut Witkowski, who's a world-class epidemiologist, who says we should have developed herd immunity, not isolated people, except for the vulnerable. And, of course, his YouTube video was censored off of that platform. So one of the things I wanted to do, Deanna, with this book was to bring back some of the censored material. So videos, interviews, talks that have been censored on YouTube, what I did was I found the transcript, or I made a transcript, and then I took key excerpts because, you know, reproducing the whole interview would be too long. And reproduced them in this book, and I figured, you know, by making a book, I'd put this in hard copy, something that was not digital, that could be digitally removed. But yeah, speaking of lack of oxygen, the fourth chapter is on social distancing and the masks. And you know, there's a very interesting experiment that was done, which you refer to as many evidences against masks in that chapter. But Nino Vitale, who's a state legislator out in Ohio, did an experiment. He pointed out, first of all, that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, requires that you be in an environment with the oxygen levels, atmospheric oxygen levels, of at least 20.9%. Well, he had a series of students come up, and he had a very sophisticated oxygen meter that read, when you put it under the mask to see what the oxygen level was, 17% to 18%. So when you're working at a job 8 hours with a mask on, you are working, you're well below OSHA standards. But in addition to that, I quote quite a few doctors on social distancing and the problems of wearing masks. One of them was a pair of doctors from Oxford University, and it was Professors Carl Hennigan and Tom Jefferson. They looked at 172 relevant studies, and they could not find a single study that supported social distancing. This was published in The Telegraph in England. Again, I say that the British newspapers did a better job than the American newspapers of not being lemmings and occasionally challenging what's been going on. But I also quote, for example, the epidemiologist Dr. Gerald Evans, medical director of infection control at Kingston, Ontario Health Centers Health Science Center. He says this, quote, to get infected with this virus, you have to be in close contact with another person, and that contact has to be for a significant amount of time. It's not 10 or 15 minutes. It's hours.
Right.
You need to be in a closed environment, a house, and in the environment, there has to be a significant amount of contamination, end quote. And, of course, various other scientists to this effect. And so the point being that this idea that in a supermarket that if you come within five feet of, you're a healthy person, you come within 5 feet of another healthy person, you're going to get infected. There's no evidence for that. In fact, there was another British newspaper. Let me see if I can bring up this quote. Okay, I am almost to it. Okay, this was from from the Daily Mail in Britain. Quote, experts cannot find a single child under 10 who has passed on coronavirus to an adult despite a huge trawl of data, unquote. Now, the whole reason I've been keeping kids, the kids don't get sick from this thing, at least to our observation so far. So why are the kids not at school? Well, it's because they can infect grandma. Well, according to the scientists at the Daily Mail, there's not a single case of a child who infected an older person. So,
right.
You know, this is why I say the disparity between mainstream media and logic and facts is greater right now on the COVID than it's always been a disparity. But it seems like it's right now, it's flat out in your face. In fact, within the last week, The Sun, again going back to Britain, on September the 2nd, the Sun of Britain said the chances of getting COVID in Britain now are 1 in 2 million.
Wow.
Of dying from COVID are 1 in 2 million. And based on statistics from the Irish government that came out this past week, your chances of dying from COVID in Ireland are now 1 in 0.002%. Yet these countries are still in lockdown. And this is why this is crazy. What they're doing, Deanna, and Ron Paul pointed this out, when the death stopped, by and large, Ron Paul had a Liberty report about a month ago. He pointed out that the death rate in America, it dropped 90%. But instead of the media celebrating this, they suddenly stopped talking about deaths and started talking about COVID cases. And what do they mean by COVID cases? Not people who are sick. You know, here in Boston, where I live, they found that 146 people at a homeless shelter called the Pine Street Inn tested positive. But guess what? Out of those 146, zero had any symptoms, not even a mild cough. So the fact that you test positive, this is even the New York Times finally, a week ago, it was August 29th, New York Times came up with an article saying that perhaps the PCR test is pretty worthless because all it's showing is that you've been exposed to the disease, but not that you're infectious. And they said, in the New York Times said up to 90% of these tests may not be worth anything. Just to close out that thought, I quote Beta Stadler in my book. He's former head of the Institute of Immunology in Bern, Switzerland. He said that all the PCR test is doing is showing that you have some, what he calls viral fragments, some little fragments that are probably dead for a long time of this virus you're exposed to, but you never got sick from. And that's all it's showing. And yet they're making people quarantine for 14 days over this, or people who are in your vicinity for 14 days. It is not logical. We have never done anything like this in the history of medical science. And so I think that, I've been sensing in the mainstream media, they're backing down a little bit. They're like the New York Times. They're backing down a little bit. They realize they can't make any of these claims because doctors and the public are recognizing that what they're saying is not in accord with good science. It's not in accord with logic.
Then why? And didn't the CDC, like 3 weeks ago, say that there were under 10,000 deaths?
Right.
Where before they were saying that there were, 200 or 300,000. And so, why is the lockdown continued?
I've said this for a long time, it's a political lockdown, not a medical lockdown.
Sure.
You point out the psychological damage and of course the economic damage, you know, especially poor people who can't work from home like some computer tech guy.
Yes.
You know, they are out of work. Their lives have been destroyed and we've seen a tremendous rise in, alcoholism, in, drug abuse, in child abuse, in, they've been kind of canceling the suicide numbers. But we know the calls to suicide, hotlines were, as of 2 months ago, were up 600%. So you know that people now who face burdens of being evicted, and how can you be more healthy when you're homeless? You know, this isn't making any sense. The disease at this point is not that deadly. Now, there's one sentence in my book which I put in bold, and that is that there might be in the future a resurgence of death, because here we are talking about how low the death rate is. Bill Gates has me worried because he's been talking. He says this is pandemic two, and now we have to get rid of that pandemic. This is pandemic one, excuse me, but we have to get ready for pandemic two. And he's been talking about how, because we're not locking down hard enough, there's going to be a resurgence of death in October or November. Those are the months he specified. And he also said that will get their attention with a little smirk on his face. So I'm thinking that they're going to do something, whether it's release of high-frequency 5G or release of a new bioweapon. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think we might be facing an increase in death rates in the future. That's why I try to stress the fact that the death rates documentably are very low right now, but they might pull something off in the future to raise them up again. But right now, there is no justification for lockdown.
Exactly. Wow. Let's take a call. John in California. John? John,
hello,
are you there? Hi.
Hi, Danny. Can you hear me? Yeah, great,
yes,
great.
Thank you.
Mr. Perloff, I've read about you through American Free Press over the years, and they have done a great job. Thank you for all you've done. And just as, before I get into my main talk, just a side note, but Dr. Fauci, you may be aware, I don't know. Technically, I learned he's not a medical doctor. He has the education and everything, but he never got his residency requirement. You aware of that?
Actually, I didn't look into his early background. I was not aware of that. Thank you for mentioning that. I'll check that out.
Yeah, because he, of course, he goes back into the 80s and 90s when he was into this. And Eddie said he never did. And you think about how can somebody get away with that and do what he's doing, and nobody ever brings this up unless it's a, you know, he's set up to, you know, they hide that. Because he's doing the work the powers that be want done. But when I heard this, actually I heard it through RB on the show, and I mean, believe that anybody else that, you know, wanted to do some real research and got all the credentials, and they don't want it, you know, big pharma, you know, they cut them off, they platform them, they put them in prison and all that. Just like that one doctor, I don't know, is it Judy Miskovits? I can't remember her name. It's Judy Miskovits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look what they've done to her.
Yes, like, and she was in jail.
Ridiculous.
She was in jail for a second.
Anyway,
whoops,
can I hold over for a minute?
Yes, we'll be right back in three minutes.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. Our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. We're talking about his book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, red-pilled. And we had John in California on the phone, and he had an additional question or thought.
Yeah, Mr. Perloff, and you know, I just wanted to say that around here, I'm in California, up in the north.
Oh, right, up and where all the fires are.
Well, actually, they're gone down. The smoke, you can't see anything around here. It's all clear.
Oh, good.
We're east of San Francisco, about 40 miles. Anyway, I've got this, it's called nextdoor.com. It's a neighborhood thing, and they, you know, give out all kinds of info, people help. This thing with the COVID over since it started, you get a lot of people. It's, what is all the problem with this? It's the media has put the fear in most of these people. They're worried about this. If you don't wear a mask, or they go out, they see somebody not wearing a mask, they go back home and lock themselves up. And I listen to what they're saying, and I don't really reply to them. I just feel sorry for them. So you're down. You're not going to live. We've got good friends who live right down the street from us. She's so worried about it, she thinks she's going to die if she gets it. And I don't. I just think to myself, you're going to if you believe in that.
That's so
but
sad.
I don't.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't believe it. I've kept my health up. I've got stuff from RBN, doctors that I've subscribed to, and they've helped me a lot with the immune. Keep that up, you'll be fine, even with the fires and the smoke around. I'm out walking every day. I watch it and I'm good. The best down thing, you know, this big downturn is, we've been here at home is, my cooking. I like cooking and, we've lost a tremendous amount of weight. Just the regular stuff. Nothing special. I've lost. My wife's lost half. She doesn't do much. She sits and does very little exercise, and she has, and she's feeling a lot better. But that's what I'm telling you. The media, if you subscribe to that, it's going to happen, the mainstream. Why all these alternatives, RBN, American Free Press, Barnes Review, over the many years, I'm in a better frame of mind because of that. The minute I hear, like, Bill Gates, I said, that guy has a lot of money. He knows nothing about science. He just has the money to throw around. People, oh, no, well, we got to listen to this. The alarm bells go up. No, no, you're not listening to that, correct. And the same with the lockdown. That's a farce.
True.
Your lockdown is your lockdown in your home. And like, you're lockdown in your home. You things you can't do, maybe, or that, but that's the other thing. So, anyway.
Regarding the TV, I unplugged my TV. I haven't had my TV on since March. I don't, it's programming. They are programming people to be afraid. Unplug your TVs, people. Don't listen.
I just use a video and watch old movies, Deanna.
Oh, I have a DVD player and I watch other things. I don't watch movies. I watch other things about energy medicine and just other things. Education.
But you're right, Deanna. Yeah, but the news, it's all one-sided. They never
see
both sides. Even those, like the doctors here, you know, hey, the coquin and all that, I got this, and they shut them down, you flatform them, and they cut them off, and they don't report on it. It's
right. James, you
so as
do
long as that happens, people don't say that it's not going to change.
Right. James, do you want to weigh in on what John said?
Well, one thing is that, much like him, I use my TV almost exclusively for watching old movies when moral framework of America was a lot better, even if they were pushing the envelope a little bit in Hollywood back then from the norms of the day at that time. But it's certainly true that what you're saying, Deanna, about the generation of fear which goes on and what you guys have been talking about, both you and John, is being red-pilled. You know, when you're red-pilled, you're pretty much immune to what they're saying. You pretty much can spot the lies very quickly, and you can you may need to vet them a little bit on a particular topic, but you can pretty much dismiss what they're saying. You recognize the lie when you see it because you're used to the pattern. The pattern, you know, liars usually have sort of a pattern to their lies, and the mainstream media certainly has that. I mean, you look at the false flags that led us into wars. You get to the point you can start to recognize them, right? So, so it's great to be red-pilled. In a way, it can be a little bit more distressing because some people who are blue-pilled, I find not many, but a few are kind of blissfully unaware of what's coming down the road. And so they think, oh, everything's going to be back to normal and we'll be back to the American dream and the mask will all be off because the COVID will be over. They kind of in that kind of illusion. So maybe for them, it's a little less distressing, but, truth is a marvelous thing and something that we should be, utilizing in our own perception of what's going on, but sharing with others so that they can hopefully reach the same status of being able to identify lies when they're put forward that are harmful to their own existence.
Indeed.
Well, truth hurts. That's the thing. The people don't look beyond that. And then one last thing I'll get off. Steve Elkins, he has a Sunday night show. He and his wife are registered nurses. He cuts through the BS and what's going on.
Okay. John, thank
Thanks
you for
lot,
your phone
guys.
Call. All righty. We'll be right back
Thanks,
in
John.
3 minutes. All right. We are back. This is Deanna. And our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. His book is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come. Red-pilled. Buy it at Amazon. Buy it wherever you can. Just buy it. It's a fabulous book. You need to have a copy of it because it gives everything that you really ever wanted to know about COVID It's scientifically backed. It's a great book. An absolutely great book. Okay, we do have Alan in Texas. Real quick, Alan, because we do have some other callers. Alan?
Okay, yeah, good afternoon, Deanna, Mr. Perloff. Ms. Perloff, I want to compliment you on your first two books. I've not been able to read your last one. But, you know, if there's anything I would say about your second book, I would rename it. The Inconvenient Truth is a Lonely Warrior. You know, a lot of people just look for the truth that makes them feel warm and fuzzy, and they don't, you know, it's like man pulls baby out of tar pit, you know, but then they don't read that, you know, baby now enslaved, you know, sex, whatever, you know, the Inconvenient Truth is what people don't want to hear. And, you know, your first book really woke me up, though, Mr. Perloff. You know, talking about a little group, you know, that doesn't have much influence. What is it? The Council on Foreign Relations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But not that I didn't believe your book, but then I got hold of things. One of the books that really blew my mind was by a guy named Barry Goldwater, With No Apologies. I'm sure you probably read that one.
You know, I don't know that I've read it, but I'm sure I've read excerpts of it and was very familiar with Mr. Goldwater, Cindy Goldwater's.
And I've got a hardback copy I got from Dr. Stan Monteith. They went out and bought up a bunch, and then they were reselling them.
Great guy.
Just let me read real quick, and then I'll get off a couple of paragraphs here. And this is
No. We're just really short on time. We'll just take your word for it. Okay. Sorry, but two paragraphs, one too many. Let's take John in Texas. John?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question concerning possible misuse of hidden technology. It has to do with two things. Is there any connection, you think, between Project Rain, alleged Project Rainbow, Project Invisibility, radar invisibility in World War II, and 9/11.
And I'm sorry, but I'm not familiar with what Project Rainbow was. You need to clarify that for me. I'm sorry.
You heard of the Philadelphia experiment?
Yeah, the ship that disappeared and reappeared at another location.
And it had deleterious effects on the crew.
Mm-hmm. I've not studied it, but I'm aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And you know about Dr. Judy Wood, don't you?
Sure, I've read her book.
Okay, the thing that, when she started talking about altering the structure of matter, I thought back to the Philadelphia, it brought back to me the memory of having read about the Philadelphia experiment. John R. Moore's book. And
can you relate this to COVID?
COVID? He was talking, he mentioned misuse. Is there, I just wanted to know if there was any, if he knew of any other things or any other technologies, deeper hidden things that are possibly being used without our knowledge, besides. Also, there is a Star Trek episode called Mark of Gideon. Was Gene Roddenberry, did he have inside information about biological warfare or use of, pandemics to control population?
What was the name of that episode again, Star Trek? What was it called?
Mark of Gideon.
Okay. I didn't watch the episode. I will say that Deanna and I were previously talking about the fallen beings. That if you read those extra biblical books I mentioned, such as Jasher and Enoch and Jubilees, they talk about the fallen angels bringing high technology to the earth, which, although it elevated man's knowledge, also was very destructive, which is what we see right now with things like chemtrails and geoengineering going on, very high technology that also very destructive. In terms of Judy Wood and the Philadelphia experiment, I've not tried to make any connection there. It's interesting to bring it up because before I started this book on COVID, I was actually writing a very extensive book. I'm sure it would have been a good 500 pages on 9/11. I wanted to sort out for once and for all the theories about the airplanes and the Twin Towers and the whole history of American foreign policy. I ran into a lot of interesting stuff. I have read Judy Wood's book, but have not made a specific connection there. But it would not surprise me to find out that there were technologies involved because of the inscrutability, that is the very difficulty of figuring out many of these events, that there was high tech involved that is secret as far as the common man, which includes us, goes.
Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you for your phone call, John.
Thanks.
All righty. Our very astute and brilliant producer said, I heard that adults have an average chance of 1 in 114 of dying in an auto accident and 1 in 19.1 million of dying from COVID-19. So shouldn't we be not allowing people to drive? Okay, let's take Dave real quick in New York. Dave?
Oh, yeah, hi. Actually, I divided the number of deaths by the number of people in the U.S. by the number of deaths, and I got 1,650. In my county, it's about double that. In other words, the rate is very low in my county. But I wanted to ask about the death numbers. What do you think the real COVID-19 death numbers are? People say there's a CDC report, retracted numbers and all that. And secondly, how do you think they're going to spread this? Cause a real problem, like Bill Gates smirking what you said. Those are my two questions.
Okay, first, it's difficult to get a real grasp on the true number of deaths. The most recent report from the CDC indicated that 10,000 approximately had died with no comorbidities, no other diseases involved. You know, Italy frightened us when they had a report of 8 to 10% of people dying from COVID, but then the Italian government, and this is in Bloomberg, admitted that more than 99% were suffering from one or more comorbidities, advanced cancer, advanced lung disease, advanced heart disease, and the average age of death in Italy was 79.5. That really gave us some context. I don't know what the true numbers are, but they are a lot lower than what we've been told. As far as how they might raise the death rates, the two things I mentioned to Deanna, one is that they may have some biochemical weapon in reserve. The military stockpiles these things, and they might release and claim there is a variation of COVID-19. The other, I kind of tend to doubt that they would do that because a virus can get out of control and affect the 1% themselves, the deep state, as we call it. The other thing that is particularly worrisome is that Wuhan was the rollout city for 5G. I don't think that 5G explains COVID alone. I think there's enough evidence against that, but that it is related. And I find it very worrisome that they have not slowed down 5G's deployment infrastructure at all while all of this is going on. We did see these people in Wuhan who were dropping dead in the street suddenly. When we look at 5G, we find that unlike Wi-Fi, which is spread as a very broad signal, 5G can be directed as a beam at an individual cell phone. And it's those transmitters, which are on the ground, there's millions of them. They've also got satellite, tens of thousands of satellites that deploy in space. And there are many transmitters right in the 5G phone itself. Is it possible those people dropped dead in Wuhan from being hit with a beam from 5G? Now 5G is at very variable frequencies and intensities. We know that at 60 gigahertz, absorbs, is a 98% absorbed by atmospheric oxygen. This is in an article by the president of the Harmonics Corporation.
Yeah, no, I've seen the spectrum of that. I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I think very few people fell dead. It's very, very hard to know whether that's real or not. But right. I think with the 5G in Wuhan, that was a great way to get them to show symptoms and be symptomatic and go into the hospital. And then they're all crowded in there for hours. And like you said, that's what's required. And then it could spread it through the whole population. Then they put them all in the same containment places as well. I think that could have happened there. I don't know. Would you also think that the comorbidities with these people in bad condition that they could result in the cytokine storm more likely? And perhaps that accounts for the comorbidity deaths. Because the excess deaths reported by the CDC match very closely to the deaths that they report from COVID-19. Have you looked at the excess morbidity data, excess deaths, on the CDC website?
I've not examined that. That came out very recently. It's fairly complicated, and I haven't looked at it exactly. I mean, I think there's some validity to saying that COVID played a role in the death of those people with comorbidities. But obviously, without the comorbidity, those people would not have died, and that really does drastically reduce the total number of COVID deaths.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for
Thank you. Thank you for your phone call. Okay, let's quick take who's next. Dave in New York?
I think we just spoke to Dave in New York.
Oh, Ken in New York. Okay, we got that right. Ken in New York.
Yep. Hi, Deanna. James.
Hi.
Unless the laws of physics have changed while I wasn't looking, I don't think there's a way to view a live virus still. Scanning electron microscope kills them. So the point is, the only person that I've ever read that was able to see a live virus was the Royal Raymond Rice. And we know what they did to him. They drove him to alcoholism, and they harassed him all of his life. And yet in the early 1900s, he was contracted by the Navy to do work for them. And everything that you hear is always like second and third party. Well, you know, we do this test, and we're looking for a DNA reaction or some kind of reaction, but it's not, you're not actually looking at the live event happening. You're looking at what you're being told is some kind of a trail or something that it left behind, or a skid mark or something.
Right. As far as Rife goes, he seems to be one of several examples of doctors who cured or came close to curing cancer who were done away with. And as far as the virus itself goes, I do have a chapter in my book, chapters not only on the 5G theory and the bioweapon theory. I have one called Other Theories About 5G. So I have one there that talks about several theories, including that of Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who he says that what you see under an electron microscope and is identified as the COVID virus is actually identical to what is called an exosome, which is cellular matter, which is removing toxins from the cell. Whether or not he is accurate on that completely, I don't know, but I felt that everybody should be given a voice, so I quote him as well as the theories of Dr. Stephanie Seneff of MIT, Dr. Zach Bush, and Dr. Andrew Broxmeyer, to give as full a view as I could. Without going overboard to some of the alternative views, but there are people who question whether or not this really is, what viruses are and whether or not, as Dr. Stadler of Switzerland has said, it's just fragments of DNA from a virus as opposed to the virus itself.
Right. Okay, well, thank you. That's what I had for today.
Okay, thank you. Question. How many extra deaths over yearly averages has COVID-19 caused? Which is a good question, because and of course in the first part of your book you give all of these death statistics just for the first 3 months, which are amazing.
Yeah, well, that put it in perspective compared to other infectious diseases and other non-disease causes of death, and showed that COVID was actually comparatively quite low. I have seen, not recently, Deanna, but over the course of this these past few months, I've seen some people who have put up graphs regarding overall deaths and said that the overall death rate in the world has not gone up, which you think it would be if COVID was that deadly. But I've not seen recent data on that, but I can say that I have seen some data that tends to confirm that there has not been a significant change in the overall death rate.
Right. Now you brought up Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who I've interviewed.
Oh,
and,
great.
And she spent 3 hours with me on, it was on Valentine's Day one year. Anyway, she talks about, in your book, you explain, she talked about glyphosate. Monsanto produced pesticide that may have something to do with COVID.
Yes, she points out that glyphosate is not only deadly potentially deadly in foods, thanks to Monsanto, now owned by Bayer, but she says that now they have these biofuels that are being increasingly used by vehicles, and that these biofuels also contain the glyphosate, and that therefore people are breathing it into their lungs, especially in areas with high air pollution. Urban areas, which was true of Wuhan, northern Italy, and New York City, which had high death rates. And so she thinks that this may be related, and she's written a paper on it. And this is a person you've got to have a lot of respect for. And so that's why I felt that people like her should have, their views expressed, included in my book. Because I'm not an expert on it, but I felt that as many experts as could be called upon should be allowed to air their views.
Absolutely. And you also mentioned Zach Bush, who I just love. He is so genuine and mm-hmm. so I just really like his viewpoints. And just the things that he says, the positive nature of what he says. But then he also points out that certain areas, Wuhan, northern Italy, New York City, that there is a problem there and really is comparable to Dr. Seneff's views.
Right. And what he points out is that air pollution may be a very predisposing factor to COVID, especially the deadly cases of it. And he pointed out that, they were having protests against air pollution in Wuhan before the outbreak, that they were introducing new forms of incineration there. Northern Italy also place of great air pollution. So he may be right on track on saying that air pollution is a predisposing factor to COVID.
Wow. Interesting. Wow. And you talked about Italy. Now Italy has a very old population.
Mm-hmm.
And so that contributed to their high death rate. Correct?
Yes. Definitely. It's definitely the elderly who are most vulnerable, and that's one thing we see affirmed in America with the nursing home death rates. Where those people were so vulnerable to being infected and to dying from it. And what was really tragic was, on top of the tragedy of deathless fact that they had to die alone due to the restrictions of healthy people, healthy family members coming in to visit.
Terrible. Terrible. Oh, that is so heartless. Very heartless. Okay, do we have another caller? Oh, okay. I don't see the caller's name. Oh, okay, David. All righty, David, in Ohio.
Hey, Deanna. Hold on just a second. I'll try to turn the radio down here so I can hear you better.
Yeah, turn it off.
James, this is kind of directed to James. I am familiar with your work, James. I think I even follow you on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm concerned, you keep saying the word virus, virus, virus. Well, the virus has never been isolated, and it's never been independently verified through 1,000 electron microscopes. Viruses are macrophages, and they eat dead matter. They're like our transportation workers in our body. And we only have 380 trillion in our body. Viruses are not dangerous. We need viruses. If there was no viruses in the world, we'd all be dead. And it just kind of upsets me when I keep, these people that are supposed to be on our side promote this stuff. It's like the people that say, okay, 9/11 was an inside job, but a plane hit the Pentagon. That really upsets me because the plane did hit the Pentagon. It's almost, it's like giving justification for why there's these continued lockdowns. You know what I mean? It's very upsetting, as you can tell.
Well, that's why I give view to many theorists, including Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who says it's not a virus but an exosome. I do include that perspective in my book, but I feel I should also give perspective to those who have differing views. So I'm trying to be as broad-minded as I can while opposing the lockdown. I acknowledge that what's gone on with COVID is deadly. I've known people, including podcast hosts whose family members died from COVID. I think that there's a reality to the disease. I think it's basically gone at this point, as DNA were saying. There may be a resurgence due to different reasons. And I do believe that different theories about viruses, whether or not they're living creatures, I acknowledge that. My 2013 book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, I acknowledge the controversy right then. So, but I feel that the differing viewpoints should be allowed to be heard.
Well, are you familiar with John Rappaport's work?
Sure.
He stands alone on this topic. Even though he's not a scientist, he's made his living. This is his bread and butter, virus scams. He says there's no virus. And in fact, he even doubles down and he says there's no HIV virus because it's all based on junk science and pseudoscience promoted as science. And then it gets legitimized because people don't know the difference. Your average person doesn't know, okay? You know, I'm a scientist now. I don't wear a lab coat, but I understand scientific methodology. Okay? And and here's the thing. You said you know people that have died. You don't know that. You know that on their death certificate they died from COVID-19. But the medical establishment has a financial incentive to promote COVID-19. They just found out these several states are getting, for each hospital, they're getting thousands of dollars. I mean, thousands of dollars. Minnesota's getting $380,000 per patient in Minnesota.
I refer to this in my book, the financial incentives to the hospitals reporting COVID cases and their use of ventilators, but I don't consider that to in of itself completely rule out the existence of COVID. I'm trying to stay open to multiple people who are honestly trying to solve the situation for us.
Here's the thing, real quick. The real story of this is not only the lockdown, which is going to cause innumerable deaths, it's the fact that these people were put into nursing homes they weren't able to breathe properly. They were sedated and put on ventilators, which is a death sentence. That's the worst thing you ever want to do.
You won't see a ventilator in nursing homes, sir. Those are in hospitals. And let me close out here, Diana. We have about 2 minutes left, I think.
Right.
I'm just going to say that, again, the name of my book is COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pills. You can buy it on Amazon. It's been selling very well there. I am concerned about censorship. I am having a separate printing done. My website is jamesperloff.com. The book has 27 chapters. They're short chapters, 6 or 7 pages each. We do cover each aspect of the lockdown from health to civil liberties. We have chapters on masks and social distancing, fake news in the media, the ways they've inflated the deaths. We have a chapter on nursing homes, a chapter on testing, chapter on 5G, chapter on bioweapon, chapter on the other theories about 5G, a chapter on Bill Gates, chapter on global vaccines, one on hydroxychloroquine, one on cashless society, one on contact tracing, one on the global ID. I haven't listed them all, but I wanted people to know that it is complete.
It's very comprehensive.
It is completely documented, completely endnoted, and it's also indexed. You can find information fast. And so that's the summary of my book. I want to thank you, Deanna, for letting me be on today. And I want to thank the listeners and the callers for their intelligent questions and for tuning in.
Absolutely. And yes, I hope that people will purchase your book. And it does have so many things in it. A book that doesn't have an index isn't a well-written. It isn't a good book. So you've got everything included in here, and it's a really a good read. And I want to thank the callers for calling in with their questions and comments. So thank you very much, James.
Thank you, Dan, and God bless. Look forward to being on you again. I hope we can talk about more things like World War II.
Oh, yes. Just COVID. That would be lovely. Yeah, COVID. That's all we hear, COVID, COVID. Okay. Thank you so much. Take care.
God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to the music. Yes?
Here we go.